Alan Crane Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240 for Autumn Semester 2022. Today, bond prices and yields. I will go back through some of the early material from the lecture on Monday because my podcast was not recording for the first part of the lecture, so I'll go back through a little of that just so that you have that for record. And then, of course, we'll have a quiz today, a surprise quiz, and so please be surprised by that. It will open at 4:20 and you will have 15 minutes to complete it. I just ignore me. I'm bad off today. This has been such a volatile day in the markets. Where am I? Okay. Yeah, it'll open at 2:45. Wow. Yeah, Alzheimer's is kicking in real hard these days. So anyway, enough of that. A quick look at the markets. And as I said, this has been one wicked day. You see that drop there? In my personal account, that drop was about $1,500. And then for some reason, it decided to play with my emotions and come back from the dead. And now, as you can see, it's actually the Dow and the S&P are both up, which is where I have long derivatives positions. I mean, this is just, I can't take this kind of punishment too many times in my life anymore. It's just a real volatile environment. And a lot of the volatility, there are a couple of reasons for this volatility. One is the numbers are so darn mixed now. I mean, you got some numbers saying that we're about to go to hell, and then you got other numbers that say everything is looking really great on the horizon. There's also volatility. There rumors were swirling early in the week about one of the major big banks in Europe was going to go under. Now, the rumors were centering around Bundesbank and Credit Suisse. And either of them is fragile right now. There's no question about the fragility of these banks, and especially when you're talking about things like Bundesbank, which is a corrupt, I mean, it's just anything that's evil in the world, you would go to Bundesbank for your help with it. It also, of course, is essentially like the central bank of Europe in many ways. The Germans run a really tight ship as far as their financial institutions go in terms of the stability of them. But the rumor was it was either Bundesbank or Credit Suisse, which was going to go tap city. And I suspected that it wasn't Credit Suisse, so I took a long position in a derivative on Credit Suisse. And it's made some money because there's an old saying in markets: buy on the rumor, sell on the news. So in other words, whether or not whatever the rumor is, good or bad, buy on it. But when the news is about to hit, get out of the way, whichever, you know, whatever it's going to be, it's better to get out of the way of it when the actual facts and truth come out. So there's that. But now, the Dow and the S&P 500 are actually eking out gains. NASDAQ is still just barely below water. It'll probably recover by the end of the day, too. But, I mean, it's just a volatile trading session. Now, over here, crude is coming up. Remember I told you that 82 to 89 price trading band? Yeah, we're coming up toward the upper end of it. Interestingly enough, the gas prices have jumped a little bit, and its expectations, in other words, if the gasoline stations think that the next load of gas is going to cost more, well, they're going to bring up the price now so that they can afford to buy the next load. So everything in these pricing is based upon expectations of what's coming down the road. And right now there's an expectation that oil is going to try to punch 90 I don't know that it's going to do that or not, but still the expectation is there, and it's better to take the worst case scenario. Gold dropped hard, and so did silver. Interestingly enough, the bulls are coming back on those, just like they are in the equities. Heaven knows what's going on. I mean, I've almost given up on this market. It's being run by demons right now. But the 10-year bond price is going up on that. In other words, there was a surge of buying. You can see it on the Spark chart. Bond yields going up, bond prices going down. Bond prices would go down if there were some money was moving out of bonds. Where is it going? God only knows right now, because it sure wasn't going. Well, I shouldn't say that. Right now, see how those bond yields have stabilized and the bond prices therefore have stabilized as well. Well, that's what's probably, now that means that the bond traders are moving toward equities. The bears have finally gotten back in charge of the mess. And so the bond market is getting quieted down right now. The buying and selling is at a minimum. I'm curious, I didn't even look at the overseas markets. Nikkei had a strong opening, and then the bears slammed it, but it came back from that. So the day ended in Tokyo on a positive note, and then it opened in London on another bad note. The thing there is that's largely a thing that's happening in Great Britain. There's a lot of political instability right now because of the new prime minister making missteps in her first couple of weeks. And so there's a lot of volatility there that is internal to the United Kingdom. Hard to say. But once you notice that at the end of the day there, the bulls were trying to pull it back out of negative territory. By the time we got over here to this side of the Atlantic, oh, the bears were in a real bad mood early on. I mean, they just slammed the market to hell. And then the bears seem to, if I were to guess, the bulls are moving more on short-term expectations, and the bulls are looking a little bit farther out there at where the economy is going to be over the next 6 months. And that is a bullish outlook for on the balance of the numbers that we're seeing. A lot of it's going to have to do with how the Christmas season plays out, though. I mean, if we have a good Christmas season, that's going to really help the markets. If it's a lackluster season, I don't know how that's going to play out, but it's not going to be very good. But the expectation is it's going to be a decent season. So buy Christmas presents, lots of them, and you'll help the economy by doing that. Anyway. As I said in that first part of the lecture that didn't get recorded on the podcast on Monday, bonds represent debt, lenders, and borrowers. If you issue, you, madam, I am unworthy of you. Dobby has markers.
Does that mean you need to leave Ice?
No, I got to check my socks first.
Anyway, back to it.
I don't want to be your slave, but, you know, if that's what I have to do. Oh, sorry. Anyway, let me stop it right now. Okay, where the hell was I? Were you? Okay. You, madam, were going to buy, you are a corporation, you want to raise $50 million in capital. Now, you can do that by selling stock or by selling bonds. If you sell stock, you're selling ownership. If you sell bonds, you are borrowing the money for a period of time. Now, the way it works is that you will come to me, an investment banker. You say, I want to raise $50 million in debt. So I go to my wealthy clients, and I also probably will syndicate this with other IBs so that maybe 15 million, you're an investment banker, I'll syndicate with you. You handle 15, you handle 5, you handle 7. So that, in other words, we spread it out. And you use your clients to say, okay, clients, we've got someone, a company, that has a need for capital, borrowed it. And so we get to I get together with you and with the company. We negotiate all of the terms of the indenture agreement. That is the agreement between, essentially it's the loan contract is what it is. It has all of the covenants, who, how much, what interest rate, all of that is in the bond indenture agreement, including now, the lenders are not stupid. They are going to put limits on the company's behavior because they want their money back, and they don't want them to have the company taking risks that would put operating income in jeopardy, because right after the operating income line comes interest expense line. So in other words, they're going to say, if you decide, well, I'm going to declare a huge dividend, the bond trustee, the representative that sits on the board of directors of the company and watches out for the interests of the bondholders, the lenders, they're going to say, the bond trustee is going to say, no, you're not. No, it's fine if you give this dividend or if you follow your dividend policy or whatever, but we don't want you blowing lots of money. We would prefer that if you're profitable, you put your money back into the operations of the company to grow the company. That gives us more distance. If the revenues go up, then the gross income goes up and your operating income goes up. Well, that puts more distance between operating income and what you have to pay us in interest. Okay, so I'm trying to think of all the things that I said. I apologize for this. Just to cover those quick things. Oh, and also, the bond trustee may have a say in the way the company conducts its operations. From the standpoint of the board of directors, which has the duty, the fiduciary duty, to maximize the wealth of the shareholders, they're going to want to take on sufficient risk to get an expected return that benefits the shareholders. The bondholders really don't like to take all those wild risks. I told you the story about the company that made this decision that they were going to go into the business of manufacturing firearms. Well, that's the bond trustee, and actually even the insurance broker said, no, you're not. That's way too much risk. It's a new line of business. It's a risky line of business. You're not going to do it. And of course, that made the company people sad because they thought this was such a great idea. And the bondholders say, no, we want you to do what you do, and we want you to do it for our benefit, because we get paid before the shareholders get a dime. So we expect you to keep your income, your operating income, at a level and not have volatility. See, volatility is bad because one year you might be way up, but if you dip down below, if operating income falls below times the interest expense, you're in default. And all that good stuff. Now, the bond, that indenture agreement, it has all kinds of what-ifs, wherefores, and all of that. Among those are, of course, what interest rate is going to be paid. And that we call the coupon rate. Government and corporate debt is not like consumer debt. During the life of a consumer loan, every payment pays the interest for the month that is accumulated on the balance and shaves off some of that balance. It services the debt and amortizes it. Okay? Corporate and government debt does not work that way. All that happens during the life of the loan is that the corporation or the government pays the coupon, the interest. And then at the end, one last coupon payment is paid, and then the whole amount that was borrowed, you give back to me. Now, I don't trust you. you see that money and you're going, blah, ha, ha, we're going to spend every year. No, you're not, because we're going to have in that bond indenture agreement some kind of a fund so that you have to put a certain amount in every year so that by the time the bond matures, the $50 million is there to pay. We usually call these sinking funds, and they talk about those in some accounting classes. However, there are other ways that this can be done. I should mention this, and I forgot to mention it in the lecture on Monday, so I'm glad I'm kind of going back through this. One way would be, okay, it's a 20-year debt instrument, okay? A 20-year debt instrument, so what you would want to do is put, let's say, oh, I don't know, $5 million in every year for 10 years, or at least so that it would accumulate to the $50 million that I want at the end. There are other tricks that are used sometimes. One is called a serial bond, which would be one where essentially we're going to do a 20-year, except that we're going to do one 20-year. You're going to do five bonds. One 20-year, you'll get $10 million. Then a year later, you'll get another bond, you'll sell another bond to us for $10 million, and then every year for 5 years, you'll sell us a bond, and we'll buy it for $10 million. You get your $50 million, but you see then, every year, there's no time when you would have to come up with $50 million. You would come up with $10 million over a period of five times over a period of 5 years at the maturities of these serialized bonds. Now, that was kind of a ridiculous example of it, but they're out there. That's another way. See, the bondholders want to make sure that the money is there at the end so that they get their original amount back. As far as, I'm not going to go through the math of it. The exam, the midterm exam, I'm not going to do any math on the midterm exam as far as bonds are concerned. I'll cover that after the midterm in the week afterwards so that I'm not stressing you about how to do that part of it. But as an example, watch this. Say that again. No, there will be no math, a bond math. In other words, you won't have to pull out your calculator for the bond questions. They'll all be word questions, true and false, multiple choice, maybe fill in the blank kind of things. These terms like indenture agreement, things like that. And the sinking fund. Don't! You did this on purpose, didn't you? Oh, yeah, a girl opened. Oh, yeah, you have nails. Well, I could have nails too, but my manicurist left. Pardon? Oh, yeah, there will. Yeah, nice try. Yes, there will be other math. But you said, no, I didn't say that. But so, for example, an IBM, let's say 4.20% 2052. Now, this is an original issue. So it's 30 years. I can tell pretty much this has just been issued or it's just about to be issued. So in this case, the first thing that I would do is I would say, okay, this is a 30-year bond. Its term right now is 30 years. Now in 2030, the term would be 22 years. The term is how long the bond has left in its life. Originally, the bond had 30 years. But as time goes on, the time to maturity will reduce until in 2052, the term will be zero. So, the coupon you will always take the coupon times the face value of the bond. All bonds, we work on the assumption that the bonds will have a face value of $1,000. And that will tell you what the check is that you will get in the mail as a bond holder. That's the amount you'll get. Now, the bonds that you would buy, you, you would be buying bonds in the secondary market. In other words, someone else actually did the lending and then they sell the bond later to someone else. But if you are the holder of record, then you will be the one who gets the $42 check for every $1,000 that you bought of these bonds. So if you decide, well, I want to buy 50 of these bonds, well, you'd get a check every year for 50 times $42. And then at the end, you'd get one last check for $50,000. You get your last 42 times 50, and then you get one last check for 42 times 50, plus a check for face value, 1,000 times 50 of them that you held. Now, about the coupon. The coupon is part of the indenture agreement. You, madam, are risky. Not too risky, but we have credit rating agencies. We have S&P, Moody's, and Fitch. And they give letter ratings to bonds. Now, they are different letters. They all have A's, B's, and C's and all that in them. In S&P, a AAA would be the highest quality. A AAA would be the highest quality bond. And then from there, we would have the AA, the single A, the BBB, the double B, and the B, and then we would go down into the C's and all that. Below A, you tend to get what we call high yield because the coupon's got to go up because the risk of the bond is going up. So we say that these ones below the A ratings are high yield. That's a fancy way of saying they're junk bonds. And it's all based upon the rating. The investment bankers are going to talk to their money people, and they're going to say, well, the risk level is, S&P is rating her as an A grade. So you're not going to get that high quality, 4.2%. You're probably going to get maybe 5% and all of that. Later, you'll go to maybe double A, and if you are very, very good, you'll get up to the level where you get the roadside car assistance. I tried this joke last time, and the map that AAA provides, and the discounts on hotels. And that's another thing. Discounts on hotels, they give a better discount for senior people. I went to Denny's, and they gave me the senior discount. Boy, that pissed me off. Well, I know. $2 is $2, but it still upset me. Well, how do you know? Oh, anyway. Okay, let me get back on track here. Okay, now there's a little terminology here. Bonds will not stay at $1,000 because markets will change their opinion. See, when the bond is issued, the original lender said 4.2%. That's what you should pay. But over time, the company may change its creditworthiness. The economy may change. So in other words, the bond price is going to move around to reflect that. And the market's assessment is called the yield. Now, over time, suppose that the yield goes above the yield to maturity, goes above the coupon. In other words, the market says you should be paying us more than 4.2%. So what that would do is that would cause the bond price to fall below par. Par is $1,000. But if interest rates went down for the company or for the economy, if the yield to maturity falls below the coupon, then the bond price is going to rise. Because, I mean, your company might really, now it's AA rated, your company might be able to go out and finance at a lower rate, like 3.8%. So if I'm getting 4.2%, that's going to make me want to buy more of your bonds. The bond price would rise. The bond would sell at a premium to par. So if yield to maturity is below the is above the coupon, the bond sells at a discount to par, below 1,000. If the yield to maturity falls below the coupon, then the bond price rises so that it is at a premium to par. Give you a real life example right now. We had very low interest rates for some years, as I showed you. And so the coupons on bonds issued from about 2018 to 2022, early 2022, the coupons were pretty low because the risk-free rate was low and all that. Now interest rates are on the rise, so all of those millions of corporate and government bonds that were paying low coupons, well, they're dropping to discount to par. Because if interest rates are going up, those low coupons suck. And so investors are going to sell those bonds and drive the prices down. So you might have seen a bond 2 years ago at 4.2% that sold near par, about 1,000. Now you'll see that same bond selling at maybe $989, a discount to par. Because investors are saying, well, these interest rates you're paying a coupon that's well less than what you should be paying, so the bonds will fluctuate. Now, bonds don't fluctuate. If they're normal bonds, they're not going to fluctuate a lot because you're going to get your money, your $1,000 back at the end. It's not like stock where you have no idea what you're going to get. So in other words, bonds tend to have less volatility than stocks do because there's this anchor out there. And the closer a bond gets to par, the closer a bond gets to maturity, the closer it's going to get to $1,000 because there's so little time left for any difference in interest rates to matter. And I will do more of this after the exam. This becomes, it's kind of like I'm babbling at you. If you think it sounds like a lot of stuff, you're right. But you get used to the terminology, and especially if I start showing you these markets. Now, one last thing, I was talking about prices, and I mentioned this on Monday, and I think this was before the podcast, the recording kicked in. But prices of bonds are in dollars. A lot of bonds, oftentimes, when you look at them in the sheets or in the screens, they will sell at a tenth of the price. That's called the quote. So if a bond's price is $990, the quote will be $99. If a bond is selling at $1,020, the quote will be $102. You are not paying the quote. You're paying the price. Don't think you're getting the bargain of the century. Now, in some cases, when a company is at risk of default, the bond price will just start to drop through the floor because there's a good chance that it's going to the bondholders aren't going to get paid. Those junk bonds can go down to prices of 800, 500, something like that. I was tempted here, and I'm asking for it. Bond quotes are actually hard to find. And there are all kinds of excuses. When I was teaching this course 10 years ago, I mean, I could pull up bond quotes anytime I wanted. But nowadays, it's really kind of difficult to find bond quotes. I'm going to try, as I did on Monday, I'm going to try to find Sears bond quote. Sears. Now, if I've got this, hot dog. Okay, look. This is a Sears bond. It was probably issued in either 2008 or maybe in 1998. You see how its term is now 6 years. It has 6 years left on its life. It paid a coupon of 6.75%. So in other words, if you hold one of these bonds, every year you'll get a check for $67.75, 1,000 times 0.0675. This is actually a trading symbol, I think. Where the heck? They don't have any information on it. Oh, isn't that great? Well, at least I got, see, they don't have any current price or anything like that. So, will you get off me? No, I don't want to see your stupid service. Let's try that again. Maybe I can find Sears. You missed the big Sears Holding stock price news bond. Three quotes. Sears is deep distress. No, this is 2018. See what I mean? It's so hard to find a stupid quote on a bond that's ridiculous. Come on. It just irritates me to no end. Creditors invest bond quotes. No, I don't want a definition, you moron. God, it's hard to find a quote. Why would Ohio State Buckeyes be in a... I give up. That's just depressing. Okay, I give. I'm out on that one. Let's try something else here. Okay, anyway, now, if a bond is backed in the indenture agreement by an asset, it's called a mortgage bond, Those bondholders have first priority if there's a liquidation of the In other words, the company's gone, it's dead, the bankruptcy went clear to Chapter 7. In a case like that, the mortgage bondholders would get theirs before anyone else. When the liquidation happened, whatever the mortgage was on would be liquidated and paid to those mortgage bondholders. If a bond is uncollateralized, it's called a debenture, D-E-B-E-N-T-U-R-E, a debenture. And they're obviously riskier, so their coupons, even if everything else is the same, their coupons would be higher because they don't have a specific thing that gets liquidated for them to get their money. And then from there are all kinds of priorities. One way that prioritization happens is you'll have the senior bonds, then the senior subordinateds, the junior bonds, and the junior subordinateds. And that is the order in which they're paid in a liquidation. Now, what's going to happen is a company gets in trouble. It cannot make an interest payment, pay the coupon. The first thing that the bondholders are going to try to do is immediately collapse the corporation and liquidate it. The company is going to go to a bankruptcy court and seek protection under Chapter 11. If the court qualifies it, then the court says, bondholders, you stop. You cannot liquidate. You must negotiate with the company. Maybe lower coupon or give them more time to pay it, something like that. Now, an example of that an example that was close to that, and I may have mentioned it before, early this year, Steak and Shake had a bond payment coming up. And I mean, everyone, I was analyzing it, other analysts said, there's no way. They're going to have to quickly file Chapter 11. They can't pay this. And so we were ready to see them make the court filing. Somehow, they found the money and they paid it. So they didn't go into Chapter 11. Now, in Chapter 11, there's going to be what is considered a good faith negotiation. In other words, the bondholders and the corporation work to see if there's a way to reorganize the debt and fix whatever were the problems that the company was having as far as getting earnings, operating income up. And then if that happens, they go all go back to the court through the court's own trustee, bankruptcy trustee. The trustee says, they both said that they've got a plan worked out, and so the court will say, okay, here's your time frame in which you can do this, and then you can emerge, corporation, you can emerge from bankruptcy, chapter 11. If that doesn't happen, and the bondholders say there's no way we're going to do this, then the company goes to chapter 7, and it's liquidated. And the debt holders are paid in their priority. So in other words, if I had senior held $20 million, there was $20 million in senior debt outstanding. In subordinated, there was $15 million. In junior, there was $10 million. And the junior subordinated had $5 million. And the liquidation value is $42 million. The seniors would get all of their money back. The juniors would get all of their money back. There's $7 million left for the juniors, and that would mean that they get only their $7 million, they lose $3 million. The junior subordinateds get nothing. And as I said on Monday, you can see that the lower the priority, the more receptive these bondholders are going to be to a reorg. The seniors, they're fine. Liquidate, we get our money. Senior subordinates, yes. So it's only when you get down to these lower priorities that they're saying, yeah, we're okay with this. Okay? It's a dynamic negotiation. Oftentimes, you'll see the juniors and the junior subordinates getting together to try to have enough punch to get the bankruptcy trustee to say, seniors and senior subordinates, we're going to do this. It's up to them, though, at the end of the day. Now, as far as the priority of the claims go, the mortgage bondholders get their money first. Obviously. And then down from there, the next one who gets paid is the trustee for his or her work. And then from there, wages and salaries get theirs to a limited extent. Now, you're not going to give a senior executive who's owed $20 million, he's not going to get all that. But then after that, you get down to the level of basically the suppliers, the unsecured, the debentures are going to get theirs, suppliers are going to get theirs. Stockholders, first, if there's any money left, the preferred get theirs. And then if there's any money left, the common stockholders get theirs. Usually though, the stockholders, whether they're preferred or common, they get nothing and they walk away. They've lost everything they invested. That's just how it works. Even if the company emerges from bankruptcy, it's very likely that the equity holders are going to come out with anything. They might even get some of their stock canceled or something like that. So you want to keep that in mind, that if it goes to a liquidation, your equity has nothing to say in the negotiations, nothing whatsoever. So that's a kind of an unfortunate consequence of being a stockholder. Remember, debt holders have prior claim, stockholders have residual claim. That's how it works. That's why we get higher returns on stock. They are riskier. That's why stocks are more volatile. They're riskier. That's why if you are young, you invest in stocks. If you're old, or if you're a big corporation that doesn't want to take risk with your excess cash, you go with bonds. They are always, there's a presumption that they are going to be at least in somewhat better conditions at the end than the stocks are. Now, you have a quiz that's opening in a minute, and so you go ahead and you take that quiz, and once you're finished, that's all I have for you today. I thank you.